The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks to Brent Noctegal for filling in on yesterday's show. I've already gotten a couple of really good emails in response to that program. I wasn't able to listen to it myself yet, but some very excited listeners have already responded to that show. We've also received quite a few responses this week. Regarding the sounds of PYC, and actually we've got more sounds of PYC coming up at the end of today's program, but this listener here, writing in from Oklahoma, says, thanks for playing the sounds of PYC. It brings a smile to my face to hear the lovely sounds of joyful young people engaging in uplifting activities. It really fills the mind with a picture of the millennium. A time when all children and youth will reap the benefits of what our young people are learning today. It could be called the sounds of tomorrow. And the music in the background adds a really special touch as well. Thanks for sharing such a delightful montage. We had quite a few sounds last night with the big awards ceremony and the dorms performing some skits, I think most of them based on biblical themes, and then some of them went back and performed their dorm songs as well. At the start of the night, we had four speeches given by four of our campers, so a really enjoyable evening all the way around. And speaking of those dorm songs, we had one of them tacked on to the end of Wednesday's show, and as I say, some of the responses that you've sent in have really brought smiles to our faces as well. It says here, what a beautiful ending with the song Take Me Home. My father loved this song. It brought tears to my eyes. And again, if you want to go and listen to that montage, it's on Wednesday's show from a couple of days ago. This last one here, coming from the Philippines, it says, I always listen to your TDRS show and other shows of the church on podcast and SoundCloud. And then the request here, can I request for the lyrics of the song you featured on the last part of TDRS number 295 about building the throne? I know it was the melody of Take Me Home Country Road by John Denver. I wish to listen to the song over and over again. Is it available for download? So as I was telling the boys last night, as they gave an encore performance of this particular song, and I told them, or I read that email, and told them that they were already celebrities, that there's requests being made for their song and for their lyrics. Well, the lyrics that they changed to that famous John Denver piece. So it's been a very, as these comments even bring out, a very uplifting camp, and what a contrast to the world that we see today. I brought this out in my Bible lecture yesterday for the camp, just going through that terrifying look at those ISIS youth camps. I talked about this on the radio a week and a half ago. But then you look at other stories, like one that I saw just this morning, nearly 100 people shot in Chicago over the last week. And it talks about one of the victims being a 10-year-old boy who was out on his front porch playing, and he got shot in the back. It says here, the number of shooting victims in Chicago stood at 2,514 Thursday morning. At this time last year, it was 1,725. So there's about 800 more shootings, 800 more victims than last year. It says the city has not seen this level of gun violence since the 1990s. It's the worst in some 20 years. All of these victims, and so many of them young, and more sad than that is that so many of the perpetrators So many of the ones shooting the guns are young people. Our young people. You look at what this world, what's happening in this world to our youths. As I brought out in that program on the ISIS camps, for youth, to brainwash them, to train them to be killers, to prepare them for jihad. And then the violence on America's city streets, carried out, so much of it carried out by young men, youths, teenagers. Yesterday in my Bible class, I played this this clip from Herbert Armstrong. This is from one of his TV programs right near the end of his life, 1985. Here's what Mr. Armstrong had to say.
The reason for all of the troubles in the world could be stated in just two words: human nature. And human nature is an acquired type of attitude and intention of mind. We were not born with human nature. We acquired it after we were born. The best hope that we humans have of bringing world peace does not come just alone from our efforts as adults, but is going to come through the training of little children before they acquire this human nature, and teaching them to be generous and to give. So I am so happy that our foundations are joining hands together to work not only for world peace, but also to promote everything we can for the teaching and the training and culture of little children.
That's the best hope, he said, that we have to bring this world peace. And Mr. Armstrong devoted so many resources, a lot of money, a lot of personnel, to the training and to the culture and to the teaching of little children. And God's work continues. In that same example today, or following that same pattern today, because that is the solution. That's the best hope for this world. And of course, we know that the widespread change for the better is not coming until after the return of Jesus Christ. But the inspiring truth behind camps like this one at Edstone and like the one at Edmond just a few weeks ago is that that change is already beginning. It's a mustard seed level change. It starts small, but it's already beginning. And of course, the great challenge for us as parents and as educators is to really help our young people to see the spiritual wealth and riches that are right here for them. The challenge for us is to teach them how to be generous and how to give, how to be unselfish. But what a wealth of riches there is in God's work and God's truth, or rather God's Bible. If we can just get our young people to dig in and to make it part of their daily lives. A number of years ago at a Philadelphia youth camp that we had in Guthrie, Oklahoma, I related this old story told by a motivational speaker back in the 1800s. And it's a story I remember often, typically around PYC time, because it's one of my favorites from PYC lectures. In any event, this motivational speaker, he said that in 1870, while traveling down the Tigris River, we hired a guide at Baghdad to show us Nineveh and Babylon. He was a well-acquainted guide, knew the land, but he was one of those guides who loved to entertain his patrons. He was like a barber that tells you many stories in order to keep your mind off the scratching and the scraping. He told me so many stories that I grew tired of his telling them, and I refused to listen and looked away whenever he commenced, and this made him quite angry. And one evening he took off his Turkish cap and he began swinging it around in the air. I didn't understand this gesture, but did not look at him for fear that I should become victim of yet another story. But, although I'm not a woman, I did look. And the instant I turned my eyes upon that worthy guide, he was off again. Said he, "I will tell you a story now, which I reserve for my particular friends." So then, counting myself as a particular friend, I listened. And I've always been glad that I did. He said there once lived, not far from the River Indus, an ancient Persian by the name of Muhammad. He said that Muhammad owned a very large farm with orchards, grain fields, and gardens. He was a contented and wealthy man. Contented because he was wealthy, and wealthy because he was contented. One day, a Buddhist priest visited this old farmer. He sat down and told Muhammad how this world of ours was made. He said the world was once a mere bank of fog. And he said that the Almighty thrust his finger into the bank of fog and then began slowly to move his finger around and gradually to increase the speed of his finger until at last he whirled that bank of fog into a solid ball of fire. And it went rolling through the universe, burning its way through the other cosmic banks of fog until it condensed the moisture without and fell in floods of rain upon the heated surface and cooled the outward crust. Then the internal flames burst through the cooling crust and threw up the mountains and made the hills and the valleys of this wonderful world of ours. If this internal melted mass burst out and cooled very quickly, it became granite. That which cooled less quickly became silver, and less quickly, gold. And after gold, diamonds were made. Said the old priest, "A diamond is a congealed drop of sunlight." You all know that a diamond is pure carbon, actually deposited sunlight. And he said another thing I will not forget. He declared that a diamond is the last and highest of God's mineral creations, as a woman is the last and highest of God's animal creations. I suppose that's the reason why the two have such a liking for each other. The priest told Muhammad that if he had a handful of diamonds, he could purchase a whole country. And with a mine of diamonds, he could place his children upon thrones through the influence of their great wealth. Muhammad heard all about diamonds and how much they were worth, and he went to his bed that night a poor man. Not that he had lost anything, but poor because he was discontented. And discontented because he thought he was poor. He said, "I want a mine of diamonds." So he tossed and turned all night, and early in the morning went looking for the priest. Now, I know from experience that a minister, when awakened early in the morning, is irritable. Muhammad awoke the priest out of his dreams and said to him, Will you tell me where I can find diamonds?" The priest said, "Diamonds? What do you want with diamonds?" "I want to be immensely rich," said Muhammad, "but I don't know where to go." "Well," said the priest, "if you will find a river that runs over white sand between high mountains, in those sands you will always see diamonds." "Do you really believe that there's such a river?" "Plenty of them, plenty of them." "All you have to do is just go and find them, and then you have them." Muhammad said, "Then I'll go." So he sold his farm, collected his money at interest, left his family in the care of a neighbor, and away he went in search of diamonds. He began very properly, to my mind, at the mountains of the moon. Afterward, he went around into Palestine, then wandered on into Europe, And at last, when his money was all spent, and he was in rags, wretchedness, and poverty, he stood on the shore of that bay in Barcelona, Spain, and when a tidal wave came rolling through the Pillars of Hercules, and the poor, afflicted, suffering man could not resist the awful temptation to cast himself into that incoming tide, he sank beneath its foaming crest, never to rise in this life again. Now, when that old guide had told me that very sad story, he stopped the camel I was riding and went back to fix the baggage on one of the other camels, and I remember thinking to myself, why did he reserve that story for his particular friends? There seemed to be no beginning, middle, or end, nothing to it. In fact, it was the first story I had ever heard told or read, in which the hero was killed in the first chapter. When the guide came back and took up the halter of my camel again, he went right on with the same story. He said that Muhammad's successor, the one who bought his farm, led his camel out into the garden to drink one morning, and as the camel put its nose down into the clear water of the garden brook, Muhammad's successor noticed a curious flash of light from the sands of the shallow stream, and reaching in, he pulled out a black stone, having an eye of light that reflected all the colors of the rainbow. And he took that curious pebble into the house and left it on the mantel, and then went on his way and forgot all about it. A few days after that, the same old priest, the same one who told Muhammad how diamonds were made, came in to visit his successor. And when he saw that flash of light from the mantle, he rushed up and said, "Here is a diamond! Here is a diamond! Has Muhammad returned?" "No. No, Muhammad has not returned, and that's not a diamond. That's nothing but a stone," said his successor. "We found it right here in our own garden." "But I know a diamond when I see it," said the priest. "That is a diamond." Together they rushed to the garden and stirred up the white sands with their fingers and found other, more beautiful, more valuable diamonds than the first. "And thus," said the guide to me, "were discovered the diamond mines of Golconda, the most magnificent diamond mines in all the history of mankind. The great Kohinoor diamond in England's crown jewels and the largest crown diamond on earth in Russia's crown jewels came from that mine." And when the old guide had called my attention to that wonderful discovery, he again took off his Turkish cap and swung it around in the air to call my attention to the moral. Those Arab guides they've got a moral to each story, though their stories are not always moral. He said, "Had Muhammad remained at home and dug in his own cellar or in his own gardens, instead of wretchedness, starvation, poverty, and death in a strange land, he would have had acres of diamonds. For every acre, yes, every shovelful of that old farm afterwards revealed the gems which since have decorated the crowns of monarchs." And so goes the story that is titled Acres of Diamonds. As I brought out to the young people at that particular camp in Guthrie, Oklahoma, some 20 years ago, what God has in store for them, what God's offering them, what they have right here in God's church, supporting God's work. What they have is acres and acres and acres of diamonds, spiritually speaking. In Proverbs chapter 8, verse 1, it says, "Does not wisdom cry and understanding put forth her voice? This is wisdom crying out. She stands in the top of high places. By the way of the places of the past, she cries at the gates, at the entry of the city. Here is wisdom crying out. Here, verse 6. For I will speak of excellent things, and the openings of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. It says in verse 8, Proverbs 8 and verse 8, all the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There's nothing froward or perverse in them. It says in verse 11, notice this, for wisdom is better than rubies. Well, let me just back up to verse 10. Receive my instruction, God says, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom, it says, wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. Nothing compares to this spiritual wealth, to this wisdom. This woman, as it says at the start of chapter 8, that's crying out. Over the years at these camps, we've repeatedly tried to, and I did it yesterday, although not by telling this Acres of Diamonds story, but we've tried to help our young people appreciate what God is offering to them, what God is giving to them. Back in chapter 3 of Proverbs, verse 19, it says, the Lord by wisdom has founded the earth. By understanding has he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the depths are broken up and the clouds drop down the dew. God brought all of this into existence by his mighty power, by his wisdom and understanding. Here in chapter 8, which we just read from, Proverbs 8, verse 22 says, the Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way before his works of old. Here again, the subject is wisdom, understanding, knowledge. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, it says. Forever the earth was. And down in verse 26, Proverbs 8, it says, while as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world, when he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree, for the water should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, then I was by him, as one brought up with him, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. You see, in everything God did, every place that God went, he retained this perfect wisdom and understanding. You can see what Solomon's getting at here. Rejoicing in the habitable part of the earth. And my delights, it says, were with the sons of men. Now therefore hearken unto me, O you children. For blessed are they that keep my ways. See, it's all right here in front of these young people. God's truth, God's purpose and plan. This way of life that brings so much happiness and joy into our marriages and our families. Proverbs 33 says, hear instruction and be wise and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that hears me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoso finds me finds life and shall obtain favor of the eternal. If we find God, if we find wisdom, we find life. We find riches. We find wealth and prosperity. It's better than rubies. It's better than silver and gold. It's better than diamonds. You think about this mind of the great Creator God who brought all of this into existence, the universe. And that same mind God offers to you. Let this mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus. We've got to let it in. Let's go over to the Gospels and look at Matthew chapter 13. one of the nice things that I can bring out, so long as I can retain some of the lessons and the experiences in my memory. I'm definitely getting older. But I was once a 15-year-old going off to youth camps, one in Orr, Minnesota back in 1985, and one in Big Sandy, Texas in 1986. And I know at SCP, that's what they were called in the days of the Worldwide Church of God. I know that at SCP, I mean, that's when I was really sold on God's way of life. And I had had a wonderful upbringing in a very loving family. And I had a desire to go to Ambassador College. But when I went off to SCP, I mean, that desire really did intensify. And I did get to go to AC for my freshman year in 1988. And I think for the most part, when I got out there as an 18-year-old, I hit the ground running. I was excited about the opportunity. I had been anticipating it for quite some time. I wanted to participate in everything. I wanted to push myself mentally, physically, spiritually. I mean, in the physical sense, someone told me about a conditioning class that started at 6 a.m. on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And I thought, well, that's something I want to go after. I want to challenge myself physically. That was the same year I also ran a marathon with some AC students in March of 1989. And so my freshman year was humming along, and it was about, I think, in the spring of my freshman year when I started to think about baptism, think about committing to God's way of life, think about really entering into this baptismal covenant with God and letting the mind of Jesus Christ in. And yet, as I've brought out before, I let up there at the end of my freshman year. I had received news I was going to be transferring to Big Sandy, which I was excited about that. And my sister was coming up on her 4-year graduation. She was a senior at college. And so there were lots of things going on, lots of end-of-the-year festivities. And as I came to the end of that freshman year and was spending basically a summer in limbo as I waited to transfer to Big Sandy at the end of the summer, the summer turned out to be very unproductive as I went off and had fun in the sun. It was in Southern California, after all. Spent lots of time with friends. I was out later than I probably should have been, going to baseball games on Sundays and things like that. And as I've told the campers before, I mean, just basically wasting away a summer that should have been really profitable and that should have built on a really exciting freshman year. And so when I came home at the end of the summer and I spoke with my father as we headed out to a local youth camp at Robbers Cave, Oklahoma, it was during that 3-hour drive that he really started to open my mind to some of the problems that were happening in the church and the fact that so many in the church were turning away from the teachings of Herbert Armstrong. And this came as a jolt. And it was on that same campout weekend that I read Malachi's message to God's church today. And what a sobering wake-up call that was. And I felt guilty because I had just wasted away 2 or 3 months of my summer. And now I come to find out that the entire church is drifting off track spiritually. Mr. Armstrong had been dead for 3 years or so. And the administrators that took over after his death, they were hard at work changing doctrine. So it was a wake-up call, and it got me back up personally. It got me back on track spiritually. I put in my request for baptism counseling when I got to Big Sandy. I got a job at the AC library where I managed to listen to a lot of old sermons by Herbert Armstrong. I really did come to discover, you could say, a lot of spiritual wealth and riches as I got back into my studies. As I got my spiritual orientation right, as I started to let the mind of Jesus Christ in, here in Matthew 13 and verse 44, it says, "Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto treasure hid in a field, the which when a man has found, he hides, and for joy thereof goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. I mean, you're willing to give up anything and everything when you come upon this kind of wealth, these spiritual riches. I mean, this wasn't one little gemstone that prompted this man to sell everything he had. He gave up everything and then made arrangements to buy the whole field, to buy all the acres as well, surrounding this treasure. Verse 45 says, again, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. See, in the case of that story, acres of diamonds. Here that individual sold off everything, chasing a mirage, when in fact he was sitting on a gold mine. He was sitting on acres of diamonds. And here, just to switch the analogy around a bit, here in the Gospels, Jesus says, when you discover that you're sitting on riches, or when you've made these kinds of discoveries, that's when you give up the physical things. That's when you give up materialism and really go after the spiritual riches. Mr. Armstrong, we know all about his conversion. He talked about it in the autobiography. He talks about it at the opening pages of Mystery of the Ages, about swallowing this bitter pill, about being humbled, about surrendering to God, and how difficult that was. It was a bitter pill to swallow, as he said. But it was also the only pill that brought real healing into his life. And he started to enter into a riveting, exciting, intimate relationship with God. He said in 1956, life began to take on new meaning, hope, and intense interest. The Bible began to open to my understanding like entering into the richest gold, diamond, or ruby mine in the world in glorious splendor. He said, as I began for the first time in my life to understand it, I became enthralled with it and studied it night and day. Very much of the time on my knees in reverence, in excited and eager joy, finding for the first time the real riches. That's what we want for our young people to discover. We want for them to find for the first time real riches. We want them to see that they're sitting on acres of diamonds. It's right here. As I told them yesterday, with respect to the tree of life, I mean, the way to the tree of life is wide open. Mr. Armstrong conveyed that in other writings and in other messages. It's wide open for them to go after it, but of course, the young people have their part as well. They have to go after that truth. When we come back, we'll be playing more sounds from PYC. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program. Here is a fact few people realize. The throne of David exists today. God made an absolutely binding covenant with David that there would never be a single generation without a descendant of David sitting on David's throne, right up to the second coming of Jesus Christ to this earth. It was the promise of a continuous, unbroken dynasty, forever. But where is that throne today? The authority of God and the Bible hangs in the balance. Request the United States and Britain in Prophecy. All of our literature is offered free of charge, without cost or obligation to you. The United States and Britain in Prophecy was Herbert Armstrong's most popular book. Never was a more important book written on the subject of Bible prophecy. Jesus Christ was born to be king. When he returns to this earth, God will give him the throne of his father David. That throne exists today. Prove it for yourself. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
And welcome back to the program. In a few minutes here, I'll be off to enjoy some of the All-Star festivities this afternoon here at Edstone. Basketball games, soccer games, flag football, and also touch rugby for the gals. So we'll get to finish the week on a high note. And you can also finish the week on a high note. Those of you listening in to the Trumpet Daily radio show, Jesse was out this morning capturing some sound bites from some of our campers who were reflecting on the past 2 weeks and some of the things that they've learned and experienced. So to conclude today's show and to conclude this week, we have more sounds from PYC. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us this week. And we'll see you next week.
Hello.
My name is Catherine Bancroft, and I think something that really stood out to me about this camp is just how family-oriented it is. At other camps, it can be like that too, but I think just because of the smaller size, it's made it so much easier to be like more unified as an entire camp. It's not just, oh, I know my dorm really well. It's the fact that I pretty much know the entire camp really well now, which is something I never thought I'd be able to do, and I'm really excited that I could because I've made such great connections with so many people now just over 2 weeks, which is such an amazing feat. Most people don't have that opportunity, so that's something that has made me incredibly happy and joyful, is just being able to make those family-rooted connections with so many people around the world, South Africa, England, then there's America, the Netherlands. There's so many different people from all those places that I know so well now that I probably would have never been able to meet before. So that really stood out to me, and just I think another thing that stood out to me was just it's so beautiful here. I love how green and windy it is. I love the rain. The weather is so much different than what I expected it to be. And then I think it just really is compatible with the camp. It shows that no matter what the weather is, you are going to be family. And you can always depend on someone. And you can be dependable too. It's something that teaches you to always look at the positive side of things. Because no matter which way the wind blows, you will always have someone that you can rely on.
I'm Caleb Hirma, and I had the opportunity to come here for camp in Edstone. It was very enjoyable. I like the small family atmosphere. There's only 35 other campers, so it's just really great to be able to get to know everyone very well. I thought some of the classes that we heard this year were very profitable. One that really stuck out in my mind was Mr. McDonald gave a leadership lecture about becoming a Renaissance man and just had very practical points that were easy to apply, and so I'm going to try and really look to applying those this year. My goals were to try and help Mr. Wainwright as much as possible, and then also to be very helpful and positive. Positive and uplifting to a lot of the other campers in my dorm, and last night I achieved the most helpful camper award, so I think that counts as achieving the goal.
So my name is Nathan Weiss. I'm from Pennsylvania in the United States. This is my first time overseas, actually, so it's been quite an experience to come over here in England. Back home it's very hot and humid, and here we wear sweatshirts throughout our activities, so it's extremely different. But one thing that has struck me throughout camp is just the amount of camaraderie between the dorms and between the people in the dorms, and it's just been a really great experience here at PYC. My goal was to have the same amount of energy level throughout the entire camp, and last night I was surprised to receive most enthusiastic camper award, so I think that one has been sufficiently achieved. But Mr. McDonald gave a leadership lecture outlining six qualities that David had that he was described as right before he was brought in to play the harp for Saul. And those six qualities were outlined in one verse, and Mr. McDonald made a lecture out of it. And it really struck me how important those six qualities are. And it just gave a lot of room for improvement. It showed where I could work, and it showed, I think, for all the guys. We talked about, you know, how we can improve on each topic.
My name is Rosica Pereira. It's my first PYC to help in the kitchen, and I never had any experience with the PYC. And this is an honor to serve the royals here.
Well, my name is Hannah Flardingerbrook, and my experience is this is my first PYC, and here in England, and it was more than I expected. Everybody was laughing all the time, so yeah.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Hi, Grandma.
My name is Micah Turgeon. I'm 15 years old, and I'm from Edmond, Oklahoma. And this year I've gone to Edmond PYC and at Stony PYC, and it's a great opportunity. 5 weeks of camp, 5 weeks of waking up early. That was pretty tough, but other than that, the activities have been great. And what's really been impactful is just how much has been emphasized about making this our own religion back in Edmond, and really here about building the throne. And I think the two themes from Edmond and here were, in Edmond it was measured and treasured, and here it's building the throne, and I think they coincide very well together. So I thought it was neat how God worked that out, and I was able to come to two PYCs, and that God really made them both impactful to me so that I could take it home to my parents, because I'm the only child left in the house now, so... We recently got a leadership lecture from Mr. McDonald. It was about being a Renaissance man, like King David. And that was a really impactful message, because over here in England, we've had a lot of messages that stress education and culture. So that's two things I really need to improve on, is just being a more cultured individual and valuing it a lot more than I have, because that's not something that's been on my mind until I came here. So... I think to be a Renaissance man, like Mr. McDonald said, I need to really improve on that area of my personality. I do remember my goals. I had two. One of them was to become a real man and to be strong like my counselor, Mr. Michels, instead of being a weak little boy that complains a lot. I don't think I've succeeded in that yet, but I'll keep improving on that when I go home, because even over here, it's easy to complain. But as we heard in a Bible class yesterday, there are kids being kidnapped into ISIS camps, ISIS youth camps, and they're being beaten and whipped, and they're suffering a lot more than I am. So I think I could improve on not complaining as much and just being tougher. And then my other goal was to really submit to the government they have here, and to really just take whatever they tell me and to really just... apply it into my life, and just no matter what it is, even if it's something that I think is wrong, just to obey it anyway. And the reason I had that goal is just to get closer to my parents. As I said, I'm going to be the only one there, so I want to be closer to them because I have that opportunity too. So I really just want to get that government structure organized so I can bring it home.
Hi, my name is Reagan Anderson, and I think it was really neat this year at PYC Edstone to sleep outdoors in tents. It was a much different experience than in Edmond. And one thing that stood out to me was it was really awesome seeing Mr. Fleury and Mr. McDonald play with us during flag football and soccer. It was just really neat, and overall, it was just a really good bonding experience. Smaller camp, 36 campers, you got to know them a lot better than previous years when I've been 144 campers. You don't get to know them as good as this year, and I really like that. Overall, I think everyone at camp just had a positive attitude most of the time. It's not as long as Edmund, only 2 weeks, but it's still pretty physically exerting out here. And yeah, just come here to have a good time.
I'm Sarah Woodard, and I'm from America, and I really enjoyed PYC Edstone. The weather is great here. I love that it's a small camp and that we really get to know each other. I feel like these are my brothers and sisters here. And I love the food too. The food's so tasty. And I feel like everybody's grown. We just love each other. Miss Amy Fleury gave one, and it was just about getting excited for your role and things that you can do to prepare now. Well, and she was just talking about, you know, like keeping your room clean and things like that. Miss Culpepper was my counselor, and she is a person that even if she gets hurt, she's just going to keep going as long as it's not something terrible where you can't walk. It's like you rolled your ankle terribly and you can't walk. If she pulled a muscle, that she would just keep going with her sports. And she's just thinking about serving other people, really.
Great. And one last question. Do you remember your goals from the beginning of PYC? And if so, do you think you've achieved them or will continue achieving them?
I think I have achieved them. My first one was to get closer to God, which I do believe that I have done. And my second one was just to take all this in, just this whole camp experience, because I know the people back home were so supportive of me coming here, so I wanted to really make sure that I just absorbed as much as I could.
I'm Chrissy Dadalo. This is my fourth PYC, and I've loved being here in England and seeing God's campus in England, and I also love the fact that camp is smaller and it's more intimate, and I feel like the smaller dorms you get to know your dormmates a little better than you do in Edmond, and it's also really nice not to be in 110 degree weather all the time.
I'm Adrienne Donato, and this is my fifth PYC. I guess what I love most about this camp here at Stone is the fact that I'm in a completely different side of the world in a new culture, and it's really challenged me to think differently. Like, they do things differently here, so it's like, okay, now I have to think how you think instead of thinking very close-mindedly and how Americans do and expecting it to be an American PYC when I'm at England.
My name's Val Leckenbaugh, and well, this is my first year at PYC, and it's really fun because I get to learn new sports like softball and basketball. I get to recap a few of the sports like rugby, tag rugby, and cricket. And it's been really fun, and also meeting new people.
I'm Gabe Reeser, and this is my fourth PYC. And what I love about Edstone is it's just a really beautiful campus and over here in England. And it's also, because it's a lot smaller, it's easier to get to know everyone a lot better and to also just create tighter bonds with your friends and also make new friends as well.
My name is John Ten Staal. I come out of the Netherlands. This is my first time at PYC, and I love PYC because you have so many people out different countries and
countries,
and yeah, just fun to make friends with other people.
I'm Daniel van Helsen. This is my first PYC. I'm from the Netherlands. And I think I love PYC because, yeah, you just get to hang around with the children from the church. And normally, that's not the case. I'm just with the people in my neighborhood. They're from the world and not from the church. So that's great at PYC.
I think Miss Davis is really, really good at inspiring all the girls to really try their hardest, and she's always so smiley herself, and she's always having a good time, and I think that's just really infectious to the girls in our dorm.
I like Mr. Michels because he's one of those counselors who's strict, but he also really likes to have fun, and he tries to make it fun for the entire dorm, and like we'll be doing something that he has no idea of, and then he just starts doing it as well, and it's makes it a lot fun for the entire dorm.
I like Mr. Michels as a counselor because he's so enthusiastic about anything, about the songs, about working around Edstone. Yeah, that's really cool.
The thing I love about Mrs. Culpepper is her enthusiasm with everybody. She's so enthusiastic, and she's always reminding us of trying to have that attitude every day as well. So that's probably one of the best things about Mrs. Culpepper.
I like Mr. Mitchell because when we're playing in the field, he just screams at us and encourages us every time, and that's really, really great. Yeah.
What I love most about Miss Culpepper is the fact that we're similar, so I can identify a lot with her, and me and her think kind of on the same railway track, so it makes it easier to follow her instructions and to know what she wants done or how she expects it done, and it just makes it easier on the dorm for me to be able to help out.
One of the things that stood out to me the most in our leadership class was the need to become more of a Renaissance man, or in other words, to be able to play like instruments and be cultured, but at the same time being able to hold your own and to be able to stand up for yourself and to fight for God.
Well, womanhood, it's, you just learn a load of new things. Like, you know, you learn how to knit, and, well, that's homemaking, but, and womanhood, like, they just teach us about how to be a woman, most basically, and that's all.
Awesome. I like leadership class because he say that what maakt het niet uit.
It doesn't matter
what your age is. Okay, you're young, you can do great things, and like men, and that I like that he say that.
I thought some things, like in womanhood, they talked just a lot about preparing now, and they also talked about that a lot in Bible class, which, you know, we've always heard that every camp, how you're supposed to start preparing now, but I thought this camp especially, they gave really practical steps that you can take, like when you go home, to start preparing, like start cooking and cleaning the house yourself to prepare for your role as a wife and mother, as a woman, and also just to really put in the study and the Bible study and the prayer every day so you can really be preparing now for your future.
I really like the Bible lectures and the womanhood lectures because the Bible lecture that Mr. Stephen Fleury gave about being a cultured individual, I see how it applies to being a woman and your role you have to play. You have to do so many things, and as a woman, you get to be like 1,000 different careers all in one job, and it really does help you to branch out just when you think about all the things you have to do as a woman or that's required.
Okay, well, it looks like that's all we have time for, so you guys have an epic day of sports ahead of you. Real quick, as you move out, what are you most excited about today?
Soccer.
Rugby.
Soccer.
Soccer.
Woo! Okay, have fun. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.